Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 2nd. I'm John Gibson, and with me via cyberspace is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Oh, a whole bunch of things. Going to be pretty busy tonight.
Tonight, after we finish taping.
Oh, no, I meant while we're taping. It's going to be a busy show. We got a lot of cover.
You threw me a curve.
Did I?
I swung and missed because I didn't know what the heck you were talking about. I was far away from that one. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay. Well,
we are going to be busy on this week's show. We've got an interview with Drew Naylor of the Chunichi Dragons. We're going to talk about the Dragons and top monthly performers. More topics than I can even remember. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so on Wednesday, I went out to Yokohama Stadium and got to see my Dragons. And it was really fun because I got to see guys like Katsuragawa-san, the translator. And he, you know, the funny thing was they have a bunch of Spanish-speaking players.
Mm-hmm.
So he greeted me in Spanish. And so all the guys look over and they're like, hey, he speaks Spanish. He must be Dominican too. And I'm like, no, stop it. Don't do that.
Yo no hablo español.
I couldn't even say that. I couldn't even work
Yo
up.
Yo lo tengo.
I couldn't even work that out of my mind, which has all been, all the Spanish has been replaced by Japanese anyway. So that was fun. And I got to, of course, I got to see Tanishige and talk to him for a quick second. I didn't get to see Mori, the coach, the bench coach, but I'll see him next time. And then I got to see Hidenori. Remember him?
He's a coach now.
He's a coach.
And does he speak more?
Yeah, well, no, I don't think so. But we did have a quick chat.
Oh.
Just very shortly.
I can't imagine him having a long chat.
No, but, we had talked before. I had interviewed him a long time ago. And,
wow.
And he kept telling me how he was old and how he was going to retire soon. And I think this is the second year.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the game. So anyway, I actually talked to Jordan Noberto for quite a while.
Wow.
Talking about the pitching staff and all that stuff. But then I got to meet Drew, and I had actually seen him last year. I bumped into him at Tokyo mm-hmm. Dome and asked him, hey, one day we want to have you on our podcast. And he said, sure, anytime. So mm-hmm. he's a guy who turns 30 on May 30th. It's his birthday this month. He's from Brisbane, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
He played a lot in the minors in the U.S. He played for a lot of teams for a number of years, but he got injured, as he will document for you in this chat.
Mm.
And has had to miss a lot of time, and that's why he ended up in indie ball here in the Shikoku Island League for a little while. And the Dragons found him, and you know, he said he had played in a tournament before when he was young, as a teenager, and he came up as a hitter. He had a double today in the game, if you saw that game today, and he had a home run in his first win
mm-hmm.
at Nagoya Dome. And he was a hitter before he was a pitcher, but they saw him touch 90 at 17 or 18 years old, and they said, son, put down the bat. So, and that's what happens a lot of times when you get guys who throw hard, they usually do that to you. So
they usually do.
Yeah. And so he ends up hitting, it was his first hit in Japan. And this was August 7th of last year in a game against the Swallows. And they ended up beating the Swallows 6-1. And he's going to talk about how he missed 4 years because of injuries with the elbow and the shoulder and all that stuff. And we've had indie ball guys on before. We had mm-hmm. Francisco Caraballo last year. We had Mitch Denning.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got the Australian hammer named Naylor. Let's hear what he had to say. Our guest this week is Drew Naylor of the Chunichi Dragons, and we thank him for taking the time with us.
Thanks for having me today.
All right, so you came to NPB after playing with a number of teams and all kinds of minor league teams and independent ball. How was that journey here to the Dragons?
Yeah, for me, you know, it's been a pretty long journey. I was with the Phillies for 8 years in the minor leagues, and then I ended up having a string of injuries, so I didn't end up playing for 4 years. In 2011, I had Tommy John, so I missed that season. Then I came back in 2012. I pitched 1 month in Double A and hurt my shoulder and missed the rest of that season. I ended up having shoulder surgery in January 2013. And my shoulder didn't get better for that, so I didn't play 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And I went and got a real job. I was working in a warehouse doing, you know, just not very fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then my shoulder finally started feeling okay, where I could pitch again in November of 2014. So I decided to give another chance, and an opportunity came up in Japan to play in the Shikoku Island League. It's an independent ball team.
Yep, we're familiar.
And so I ended up pitching well, and all of a sudden I'm throwing 90 to 95 miles an hour, and I really dominated the league. So it turned some heads, and the Dragons, they decided to give me an opportunity, so I was really happy about that.
All right, now you got your first win with the Dragons at Nagoya Dome last year, hitting a home run. And when you rounded first base, I think you said something that I don't think we can repeat on this show. But just tell us what that moment was like for you, that whole game.
Yeah, first, like my debut was in the Tokyo Dome, so I was, that was really crazy for me, because that's like Yankee Stadium of Japan. So there was 50,000 people for my debut. And that was awesome. My family was there, but we ended up losing a game in the last inning, so that was unfortunate. But for my first win, it was first home game, pitched 8 innings, 1 run, and I ended up hitting a home run. There was, I hadn't really been hitting that much, obviously, lately, and I just hit the ball flush, and it kept going. And when it went out, I was just so excited. It was my first hit in the major leagues in Japan after 4 years of not playing, and it was a home run to right field, and you don't really see too many home runs in Nagoya anyway. It's a massive stadium, so I didn't really know what to do. I just kind of threw my hands in the air, and whatever came out. But lucky in Japan, they didn't really understand that word, so it's okay.
All right, so you came here after all this time in these different leagues. What did you experience with the talent level when you started facing Japanese batters in MPB?
The Japanese batters, they battle really hard, and they're really tough to get out with two strikes. You'll see them sometimes chase bad pitches, but a lot of times they'll just foul pitches off, and they're all like, a lot of them are very fast, so they'll hit a lot more ground ball hits than American players do. So, you got to really make sure to throw good pitches, or else they're gonna put the ball in play and get a safe hit.
Now, how do you evaluate yourself? Because a lot of times we hear the announcers and the former players, the color analysts, say that the foreign pitchers are not pinpoint with their control, and they can't hit the spots. They're just trying to get close.
Yeah.
How do you evaluate yourself when you're pitching?
Right now, I think I'm spotting up pretty good. There's some pitches I'm missing here and there, but that's pitching. You just try and do the best you can. I'd like to just reduce my amount of walks. Last game, I ended up walking 4 guys, but I think they were all on 3-2 counts. So, the Swallows, they really battled hard with 2 strikes and made me make the mistakes.
That's what
and,
they do, yeah.
So, it's sometimes it's tough. But, for the most part, I think I'm keeping the ball down the zone, and I'm controlling all my pitches. I'm throwing, because here in Japan, too, you end up throwing your off-speed stuff a lot more in hitters' counts. Like 2-0, you throw a lot more curveballs and changeups, and 3-1. So, doing that, it really helps you to master those pitches and have confidence to throw any of your pitches in any count, even though it might be your worst pitch. So, okay. Learning to do that, it really helps you a lot.
Well, that's another question I was going to ask you, because I know the philosophy here is to pitch backwards, as they say in the States. And yeah. Do you adopt that, or have they asked you to adopt that?
I think what got me here is because I attack the hitters. I like to throw my fastball and be aggressive inside. So I've tried to stick to that. But when you come to a new team, you try and keep the coaches happy, keep the team on your side. So it's a bit of a give and take. So I try and pitch my game, but also these guys, the catchers, they've been playing in this league for a little bit longer than I have. So yeah. I gotta
not these catchers though.
we got a young catching staff, but these guys, they know what they're doing, so that's why they're here. So it's good to get on the same page, and it's always easier to pitch and a catcher can call a good game if we're on the same page.
Now, what about this team? You guys, I want to call it a rotation, but I think you're the only guy who has pitched in 5 games.
Yep.
And the other guys, there's been 9 pitchers to start games already. At least when you see that 1 month into the season, it really tells you something's wrong with the team, but you guys are winning. What's going on?
Yeah, right now, I think the coaches are just trying to find a good rotation that fits. For the most part, the pitching staff has been doing pretty well. We've been keeping the game close, and that's why we've been winning. We've won a lot of one run ball games this year already, so that's good. We need to keep doing that. But as for the rotation, I think the coaches are still trying to, because it is a new team this year. They really are bringing up a lot more younger guys, and they're trying to start fresh, it seems like. So they're still trying to find a good combination of guys that's gonna work. But you know, I can't really tell the future, like we were talking about before, what's going to happen. But you know, we also have had a few rainouts and the unfortunate earthquake. We were meant to play the Giants, so the rotation's been a bit staggered so far. So I think the coaches are still trying to play catch up with that too. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks to see what happens.
All right. Well, I know they drafted a pitcher with the first pick, Ogasawara, and I know that they have some young pitching in the organization. Was there somebody you saw out of camp, since you were with them in camp, who might be able to contribute this year?
You know, there's a few of the young guys. Yeah, Ogasawara. We were in the same group when we were throwing and doing bullpens and all that this year. So you know, he's a good young kid. He wants to learn. You know, you can tell by his attitude. He's really excited. He's going to be a good asset for the team, and probably next year. He might come up early this year if he's pitching well. But Hamada, you know, he's a good left-handed pitcher. He came up this year early. I think he struggled his first outing, but you know, I've seen him pitch a lot, and he has some good moments. So he's still a younger guy. So when he gets a little bit more confidence in himself, he's going to be a good pitcher.
I like both those guys. Okay. Now, the team didn't have a big home run hitting threat per se last year and struggled to score runs. And now Viciado has just been blasting the ball for you guys. How much does that change the dynamic of the team?
Yeah, you know, his bat is huge for us right now. He's got us out of more jams than we can count so far this year. And we've only played maybe 25, 30 games. So, you know, he's already hit 8 home runs, you know, 4 in the first 3 or 4 games. So, and he's not just pulling the ball, he's hitting it to all fields. He's hitting home runs to right field, center field, left field, you know, and you know, he's hitting doubles too. And when he's not getting a pitch to hit, he's battling. He's fouling pitches off, and then he'll just get a little single up the middle to get a rally started, or to score a run when we just need something. So he's really doing a great job for the team. And you know, you can tell by the way that they're pitching him and pitching around him. And now Nonita, he's hitting behind him, so, and he's hitting the ball really well too right now. So it's tough for opposition pitching to pitch around those two guys.
Okay, now I want you to just play pitching coach for just a moment and talk to me about the bullpen.
Yeah.
Matayoshi.
Yeah.
Tajima, and then Fukutani at the back. They've been up and down sometimes this season. Now, what advice would you give to Fukutani, the closer?
You know, for Fukutani, you know, he just needs to trust his ability. You know, he throws hard. He throws the ball hard. When he keeps the ball down the zone and uses his off-speed stuff, you know, he's very hard to hit. So, you know, right now he's just going through a little bit of a slow period where he's, you know, he's giving up a couple base runners. But for him, I'd try not to think about it. Just try and have a short memory and you know, try and just get after it every time he pitches. So, you know, that's the job of a closer. He's getting his chances to close. They keep throwing him back out there, so they want him to be the guy. So, you know, like, he just needs to just step up and really, really just start attacking the hitters, and you know, he will be fine.
Okay, and then the last question, I want you to look into your crystal ball and tell us, I mean, you guys are 4 games over 500, but on a good pace in terms of winning. Tell us how we can see this team finishing in a playoff spot this season.
Yeah, you know, we have a really young team this year. The thing with young teams, you know, they can either get really hot or really cold. And right now we're doing really well. We're staying hot. The pitching is doing well. So, you know, I think if we stay consistent like this, we'll give ourselves a good opportunity for the playoffs.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, good luck. We appreciate your time.
No worries. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Drew. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Drew, it's good hearing from you. Always enjoy chatting with you.
This is the one thing that stood out to me in the interview, and then I ask you. He doesn't have that goofy accent that a lot of foreign guys come over. When he said Ogasawara's name, he didn't have an accent in it. And when he said Fukutani's name, he didn't say Fukutani or something like that. He's pretty good to considering he hasn't been in Japan for a while with the Japanese names.
Well, I think he probably, you know, he had to learn how to speak American names. You know, that can be pretty daunting.
Well, I could see I could put an accent in the name Jim Allen somewhere.
Sure you could. Because right. Because it's you.
Yeah. All right, so what tickled your ears on this interview?
Well, that's a nice expression. Well, of course, what I remember speaking to Drew last year was that we talked about him facing Mitch Denning. And it was, I believe, it was the first time two Australians faced each other in NPB. And then, like, later that day, I was home and I'm going, I wonder, and I'm going through my photos of the 2013 World Baseball Classic, and Australia played Japan in two games, two warm-up games.
That's right.
In Osaka, and both Drew Naylor and Mitch Denning were on that team.
Haha, and Atsushinomi really impressed some of the scouts that day, I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and I had a picture of them. I had a picture of them having their picture taken by the Australia consulate in Osaka.
Wow.
So I'm going, oh, I've seen these guys before. Actually, I'll be honest. I don't remember if Drew was in that group photo or if he, actually, I believe he told me he was on the team. And so my memory is a little old.
Mm-hmm.
But it was
only the memory, though.
Yeah. I mean, I talked at some length with that about the WBC with Mitch. So in any case, yeah. So I really enjoyed that. I've been really impressed with what he's done. And I was thinking, you know, listening to his I don't know what you would call it, his injury docudrama. I don't know what it is. It's like a Herman Wouth novel, you know, all the details of all these things going on. And I just wondering, you know, how does one get back to throwing 90 miles an hour? You know, because I've talked to, you know, people like Kyle Davies of the Swallows and a number of other guys who are pitching in Japan who are saying, like, you know, my arm doesn't feel like it used to.
Mm.
You know, I'm learning how to pitch with a different arm. And, you know, so it's really welcome to hear somebody say, you know, I came back from all these surgeries with, you know, being able to throw 90 miles an hour all of a sudden out of the blue. And I'm thinking, what kind of warehouse was he in, or was he was like throwing boxes? Or
I didn't ask him. It didn't sound like it. Yeah, like he wanted to be there very long, and he wasn't. But I to answer your question, I think, you know, when you don't pitch for 4 years, that's a long enough of a rest, and it's difficult to come back after that. I think so.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed with that. I don't think it's not normal. So the other thing that really that impressed me about what he said was the expression, gotta keep the coaches happy.
That's one of the things I wrote down too. Yeah.
That's a wonderful answer, because, you know, it's so true. And I think when we talk to players, 9 out of 10 or more, I would say just most of the time.
You can go ahead and say 9.5.
Well, that's not the number that was coming to mind, but
there's 0.9, 0.5 players sometimes.
I don't know. I don't. I'm just, you know, talking off the top of my head.
Right.
You know, where there's no hair here. And
thanks for that.
Yeah, a little graphic illustration. And it occurs to me that most of the players we talk to, you know, when you say, you know, how did you adapt to Japan? 9 times out of 10, to use a, you know, simple expression, they'll say, basically, I pitch my game, I haven't changed anything. And then they'll sort of like throw in, I did change this a little bit. Oh, and then I did change this a little bit, and I have to adjust to that. But basically, I do the same thing I always did.
Right.
You know, everybody says that. So for him to come out and say, I'm learning things, and I'm taking people's advice, and I'm listening to them. Because what I got out of that was not only, A, I know what I'm doing, and I have a plan, but B, I'm willing to listen to what other people have.
Mm.
You know, I'm adaptable.
Yeah, I remember when Brandon Dixon, I did the Brandon Dixon interview when we had him on the show, and he said something similar in that he tried things his way early on, and when that didn't work, he listened to his pitching coach, and things started to fall into place a little bit better for him. And I think, obviously, you have to make adjustments along the way, and you have to find a happy medium. But that Brandon Dixon interview, I think that was 2 years ago, because we didn't get a chance to have him on the show last year, and he touched on that heavily, that player versus Japanese coach dynamic slash relationship kind of thing that's going on there. And I think it's hard to work those in as a pitcher, because you're dealing with obviously every pitch, whereas a position player, he might shift his position in the field a little bit or something, but he's not impacting every pitch like the pitcher is. And so that's just a different dynamic. Yep.
So, you know, that got to me, and I was thinking, you know, I think about perhaps my most frequent question is, you know, what did you learn? What have you learned here? And, you know, what have you adapted to? And what did you want to learn? And so on and so forth. So, yeah, well, that was kind of fun. That was basically it. Those two things. So now, how about you?
I guess one of the other things that caught my ear, even while we were talking, was when I asked him about the rotation, and it has no fewer than 10 guys have started. I counted today.
Okay.
10 starting pitchers. And that's including the Junki
Ito
experience that we saw on Saturday. You know how that story starts, and we know how that story ends.
Yeah, that one won't replace the Jimi Hendrix experience.
No, it will not. So when he said they're still trying to find a good combination, I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to do in March?
Yep, that's what I was thinking. This is the, you know, you come out and you basically – you look at what the guys can do, you know what they're made of, and you say, this guy can pitch, these are the five best guys, let's go with them.
Yeah, and I thought, obviously, they're having trouble with the position. And at the time that we were talking, they were 4 games over .500, life was good, they were playing the struggling Bay Stars, and basically they went over the weekend to Hiroshima and... Not only Seiya Suzuki, who's just on fire right now, but most of the Carp beat their brains out and took advantage of that pitching staff, and it was a very ugly situation for them. And there's no mixing and matching with different combinations of starters that you could do to hide bad pitching. It just, you know, it's just not gonna, you know, you're not gonna get through. I feel sorry for the fielders at some times. Looking at how they're going to have to you just hope they hit the ball at somebody. And then you hope they don't hit it at them too hard because it might hurt them.
Hashtag high heat. Indeed.
Yeah, no body serves, please.
So, yeah. So that, I think that was one of the things. And, I mean, he said a lot of interesting things. And obviously, you know, him being in his second year here in Japan and not even a full year in. Because I think it was in the second half of the season that he joined the Dragons.
Well, in the middle of the season, yeah.
Yeah, he's still learning.
Sure.
And, you know, he talked about the fact that the Swallows gave him some really tough at-bats and forced him to 3-2 counts, and he had walks. Yeah, I think everybody does that. I don't think it's just the Swallows. And he had his troubles today. Of course, the Carp are really hot. But I think if he's going to be pitching against the Giants right now, I think the only team that's safe to go out there and say we have a really good shot to shut him down is the Bay Stars right now, unfortunately.
Pretty much.
And maybe perhaps the Tigers, but they can rise up and rally on you too. So I don't think that's very unique, but I certainly appreciate the fact that he's learning, and you can sense that. I got the sense that he's still finding his way in terms of Japanese baseball.
Yeah, I hope. You know, I hope this is a story with a happy ending. I think the Dragons are getting – they've been sorting things out really for a couple of years. And I like a lot of the pieces, but to me they're beginning to look like Oryx. They got a lot of good pieces, but I don't see a team.
Well, yeah, I'd like to talk about them a little bit more. Now, they – like I said, they were 4 games over .500 at the time that I did the interview. They had a really bad – scene go on there in Hiroshima. Now they're only 1 game over .500. But NPB Reddit did a plus minus the other day, or a run differential the other day. And at the time he sent it out, they were a minus 10. Yet they were a winning team.
Yeah, well, that's...
And now they're minus 21. And they're still a game over .500.
Yeah, well,
that's
more likely than, although it's not exclusively, it's one of those things like balls in play. You know, you just can't look at the number and say, well, yeah, he's hitting well or he's hitting badly, because there's so much luck involved.
Yeah, with the things that Diane Biciedo has brought to the team in terms of hitting, you know, the thing about him is the first few games when he hit a bunch of home runs and had driven in a lot of runs, I said, this guy is like a Vladimir Guerrero type guy who he's a good bad ball hitter, but if he keeps swinging at pitches out of the zone, he's not going to do very well here. And then all of a sudden,
Right.
I think 2 weeks ago that changed and he got really patient at the plate and he stopped swinging at pitches that even borderline pitches.
Mm.
And he started swinging at strikes only. And and you know, he's not all the time. You know, he has the tendency to go after some pitches out of the zone, but he's still punishing pitches. And then Shuhei Takahashi, who unfortunately has a broken bone in his right hand and is likely to miss 2 months, I guess is the best way to put it. Some of these guys who get this particular break in their hand, normally, I guess the average is about 2 months, but it could be shorter, it could be longer, we don't know. He said he heard a sound, he heard a pop.
Wow.
When he took a swing, and this was, I think, on Saturday. So, unfortunately, and he was developing, he was really coming around.
Mm.
Again, another guy who was swinging at more strikes, because I remember talking about how he used to chase and really leave the zone, didn't have a lot of discipline, and I've seen him stop that, at least take some more borderline pitches, or if he knows he sees a pitch he can't do anything with or handle it, he doesn't swing early in the count. You know, I also talked to Ricardo Nanita, actually, the other day when I went out to the park, and we talked about hitting a little bit and how he's been hitting, but he and Biciedo and Takahashi had been doing so well. They've been really carrying the team, and it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic changes. They scored 6 runs today and couldn't hold on to a lead. They might have gotten comfortable thinking they probably could hold on to the lead, but you know, they had the lowest home run total in the Central League last year. That's improved, obviously, with Viciedo and other guys contributing a little bit. But
well, they're still the lowest.
They're still the lowest, and you lose Takahashi. And, you know, I was talking with the on Twitter with a guy who does the a Dragons blog. And he asked me who was going to take over at third, and I you know, when I saw the injury, I said, well, it's Masahiko Morino. I saw him out there on Wednesday dragging his old sludgy body around in the warm-ups.
Well, we got to see how he's playing third.
Yeah, was that two errors?
Well, his second play, he threw a ball about 20 feet over the first baseman's head, so he's still got his arm.
Hashtag high heat.
And this is a guy who at one time played second base or started out there or something like that. So, yeah, okay. Well, I don't think he's a long-term answer. I want to say kid Tani, but he's not a kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's an option, but again, he's not much of a hitter, although his average is high right now, but he's just a slap-and-run guy. I tell you who really has been impressing me is Naomichi Donoue.
Yeah.
And that's been shocking because I remember they wanted to give him this position years ago,
right,
shortstop, and he couldn't handle the hitting, and when he could handle the hitting, he couldn't handle the defense. And they've thrown him all over the infield, and I think they gave up on him, and I think Issei Endo was the guy they were going to go with now. And I was talking to somebody out there, I think it was Isaac Ikuma, who's now doing some coverage and stuff, and he says they really like Endo and they like his swing. And I do too, actually. He's got a nice swing, and he hits from the left side, and so he's the guy they really want to give the position to, but he got injured, and that there's some skepticism as to whether he's actually injured or he wasn't doing things the right way and got sent down to the farm, and he's not even playing there that much. So that was a mystery that I couldn't solve that day because I didn't have time. But Donoue has really taken over since he's been out there. So the Dragons have already suffered some injuries. They don't really have a pitching staff. A rotation. The relievers are, obviously I went through asking Drew that question about Fukutani, and you know, they've got a lot of problems and questions, and yet they're winning games, which is really odd to me.
Well, I mean it's not normal that you're outscored and you win, but it's not uncommon. I mean, it's not sustainable.
Exactly.
Because it's not sustainable because, you know, you'll have the same group of people, like, you know, the Tigers were like this much of last year, who, you know, they score very little. They allow a lot of runs, but they win a lot of games basically because they win the close games.
Mm.
Okay. And people say, oh, they're a good team because they win the close games. But the same group of players next year suddenly forget how to lose the close game, how to win the close games. You know, it's like, you know, they treat it like all these things are treated as skills, like it's the reason.
Right.
When it's when it's just a symptom of luck, mostly.
Right. And so the bullpen, the roller coaster in the bullpen, I mentioned Tajima, yeah. I mentioned Matayoshi, I mentioned Fukutani, but one guy I kind of like, and he looked good against the Bay Stars on Thursday and looked just as bad against the Carp when his next outing was the rookie Fuku.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And when Drew mentioned Hamada,
mm-hmm.
I thought, now here's a guy, if he had a better motion, and because he's all over the place with his windup and his delivery, if he had a more quiet, subtle motion going to the plate, they could make him a reliever, because I think he'd be good in that role. And mm-hmm. I think they need a good left-hander to come in out of the bullpen. Certainly isn't Iwase.
Yeah, I think that's sort of a sign of how bad things are, that they're giving Iwase chances to pitch, and he really doesn't merit it.
Yeah, and I think the game that really comes to mind for me is the April 23rd game where they were beating the Swallows, and mm-hmm. Coco Ballantyne opened the inning with a home run off Kutani, and he kind of shook his head, and then another guy got on, and then immediately it seemed like it was out of spite that Tanishige went to the mound to yank him, because he was just pumping fastballs and wasn't throwing his secondary stuff over the plate and just didn't look very good. And then Iwase came in and everything was flat and slow.
Wow.
And he gave up a hit and then a home run to Yuhei Nakamura, and that was basically the game. And, you know, there's nowhere you can go from there. You know, you can't bring in anybody else. So it was just a bad situation for them. And the next time out, Fukutani had a little bit of trouble with the save, but he did actually get it done.
Mm.
But I think they wanted to yank him again, but they couldn't. So there's a lot of problems going on there. But I don't know. This team is still intriguing because it has some good pieces. But like you said, I see a lot of good parts as well, but not a group of guys playing together and working together.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of them not working together, which can sometimes be the thing with Oryx, but it's just more like the pieces don't quite fit.
Well, I mean, in working together, I mean, it, like situational batting, like they had a few times this weekend series where in some situations they could have gotten some runs home easily. And when I say easily, I mean, they weren't facing a guy who was at his best and was throwing great pitches everywhere, but the things that they were trying to do with the pitches that they got was not right for the situation, or they weren't able to convert or get some runs home from third with runners home from third with fewer than two outs in the inning, and they didn't execute in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I meant by working together. So
okay.
I don't know, the team needs some work, and we're going to see that it keeps going through this transition, I think, with especially if there are more injuries.
Right.
But third base right now, I mean, they can't even bring Hernandez, Andy, back up from the minors and put him there because they have so many foreign guys. And, you know, Noberto Jordan, when I was out there talking to him, said, well, when he pitched the other day in Yokohama, that was his first outing in 12 days on the top mm-hmm. team. So that's bad. You can't have a starting pitcher sitting around that long. They just have to figure out a plan and then stick to it long enough to see if it works or not.
They got to borrow the Hawks' cryogenic tank, I think.
Who are they going to throw in there?
Well, if they're going to keep it up for 12 days, they'll put them on ice.
All right, let's make a seamless transition and talk about salary rankings. Wow, how's that seamless? The other day, I think maybe it was Kyoto. Was it you guys who sent out a story about salary rankings? And then I saw MPB Reddit tweet something, and so I'm like, oh, this would be a good topic to talk about because I translated it. Was it you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I did see the story. And I wanted to talk about it because I saw a couple things that were just compelling to me and drew me in. Mm-hmm. One was that SoftBank was at the very top. And not only was it at the top, it was an estimated. Now, these are estimates, right?
Yeah, there are estimates of estimates.
Explain yourself, sir.
They're estimates of estimates of incomplete data sets. okay. As we've said in the past, the NPB and the union don't actually know what the players make because there's no way of enforcing that the teams there's no way of compelling the teams to report actual numbers.
You hear that, people? They're all guesses.
Wow, they could be on the podcast and fit right in. Okay. It also does not include members of the union, which is not – some Japanese players are not all Japanese players are necessarily members of the union.
Mm.
Okay. But the averages were among union members. And foreign players – there are currently no foreign players who are union members. It also does not include incentives, as if they were to actually knew what those were. And I don't think they have a clue.
Right. So, you mean the figures?
Yes.
They don't know what their figures are. Yes.
They're base figures, and it wouldn't include other things that are not mentioned on probably on the NPB contracts, which they might actually know. I think they probably send the base NPB contract, but there can be all kinds of other money and other deals. So anyway, so it's a guess of a guess about a guess.
Mm.
And repeat that 700 times and see how the data comes out.
So it's more like, guess who's coming to pay me?
Well, that's the part that they know. What they don't know is how much they're getting paid.
Okay.
So that's what the data is like. And why don't you say what you had to say?
Okay, yeah. Okay. So at the top is, which surprises me, is SoftBank at $69.6
million. Mm-hmm.
And that's an average salary per player, per union player,
mm-hmm.
or member per year.
That's correct.
And then next is Yomiuri at $57.87 million. And I thought they would be at the top because that's usually where the Giants usually are.
Right.
And they're not. And I was kind of shocked. But then I was even more shocked to see that the Bay Stars were down at the bottom at $24.40 million. And I thought, you could pay more money for your players. That's why you guys are down at the bottom. You're
wow.
at the bottom of life right now. Pay wow. more money and get better players. I don't know that more money doesn't always equal better players. I know that. So
yeah, no, that is true. But generally, the higher paid teams do better than the lower paid teams. But there's some of the reasons is the salary structure. Something I've liked to get into, but I've rarely had a chance. There's a lot of seniority involved, and you know, and how well the team results. How the salaries often reflect the team's results.
Mm, right.
Players expect raises when the teams win pennants.
Expectations. Yep. Yeah.
So as much as the Swallows players and manager want to win another pennant, the front office is probably going, "Will you guys cool it?"
Yeah. Be good enough to get fans in the seats and
exactly.
have a lot of interest, but don't yeah. make us pay you too much. Yeah,
exactly. Don't win the league. Don't win the Japan Series. Don't do any of that stuff that's going to cost us more money.
Yeah, and you know the Dragons usually are up around the top, and they were at $26.92 million, which was kind of interesting for me.
They've gone way down.
Yeah, in recent years.
5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been going more. Dominican Republic guys and
which aren't counted,
right? But I mean, in terms of overall salary, and we know that.
Well, they were always heavily Dominican oriented because of Shigekazu Mori.
Yeah, Mori's
connection, right? Because right, the head coach and pitching coach because of his connections in the Dominican. But you know, the newspaper business is really what did them. The downturn in the newspaper business. Has caused the Dragons are no longer players and free agents like they were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're slashing salaries, which is why Hirokazu Ibata finished his career with the Giants.
I remember you talking about that. Yep. They cut a perfectly good player just because they wanted to pay him less. Yeah. Or not pay him. Yeah.
Yep.
Understood. So, yeah, if you guys didn't see the list, I do have it. So if you just tweet me, I will retweet it. But I think I tweeted it out. NPB Reddit tweeted this list out, and it was compelling stuff. Interesting. Just wanted to mention that. And, you know, I think obviously the figures were released by the media. And as you have stated numerous times, the media doesn't have the actual figure. No one does. Go ahead.
Well, actually, they were reported by the union. The union is the one that does this survey.
Obviously, it was released
by the media, but the data all came out from the Japan Professional Baseball Players Association.
Okay. All right. So something to keep an eye on or keep in the back of your head as you're watching your team win or lose.
Boy, he's making too much money.
All right. So, and then obviously this past week on Tuesday, Takahiro Arai of the Hiroshima Carp reached the plateau, the 2,000 hit plateau. Mm-hmm. In fine fashion, if I do say so myself, he doubled in a run at Jingu, stood on second base after he had been telling everybody that he wasn't really thinking so much about it, and let out this big, heavy sigh of absolute, I think it was a elated relief.
Yeah, that's a good expression. I like that. Can I use that?
You may use it, sir.
Wow.
You take all my good stuff anyway. Why are you going to ask now?
Whoa. We're going to go there, are we?
No. I'll put that back in the garage.
You better. You better.
So he reached the milestone, and it was a beat-down win over the – they've been beating people down all week to come to think of it. Yeah.
They
beat up Yoshihisa Naruse and the Swallows that night, and – I think he had hit in 7 straight games at that point. I don't think he got a hit a couple days later or something like that. But you know, he went storming toward this milestone and just zipped right past it.
Yeah, like they were going to pay him extra for getting there quickly or something.
Yeah, yeah.
He also had his 350th career double.
Double, and he's getting close. I think he's about a little more than 10 home runs away from 300. So that's, I mean, it's a pretty good career. We talked about it last week that we don't think he's Hall of Fame worthy, but
he's in that, he's getting in that area.
Well, I said I think that guys are going to vote him in, and he's a really sweet guy. And if anybody saw any of the post game, like if the post game interview or the news interviews that he did that night, you can understand why, because he's such a great guy. And I went out to talk to him last year because I did a story when the Central League was really tight in this, I think it was around the All-Star break, and I said, what is going on in the Central League? And you know, he said, okay, well, I'll talk to you as soon as I finish hitting. And you know how all the players do that at the bench. And he came back and we sat down, and I mean, he just really thoughtful answers and is just a down-to-earth kind of a guy. If you met this guy somewhere, if you were sitting next to him on a bus, or like he'd be on a bus, on a bus or an airplane somewhere, you wouldn't know he's a pro athlete. You wouldn't know he's a professional baseball player, and he doesn't act like it. And that's the best part.
Yeah, well, I'll tell the story. My it's not really a story. I was having lunch. A friend of mine was having lunch, and I was having a coffee, and we're sitting there near Tokyo Dome. I was going to go work at the U.S.-Japan All-Star postseason All-Star Tour game, and we're there early. We're just chatting, and this guy walks past, and he's got his Starbucks, and he walks by and says hi, and I says he said, "You're doing the game today?" "Yeah." Says, "Okay, see you later," and he disappeared. My friend said, "Who is that?" I said, "Oh, that's Takahiro Arai from the Carp," and it's like, yeah, and it's like, well, how come you didn't tell me? We could have had his picture taken together. Oh, well, it didn't occur to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's just one of the guys, man. He's a genuinely nice player, and that's why I think he's going to get in, because he deserves a lot of accolades, and a lot of people, everyone who was talking about him that night said, this guy is the epitome of hard work. You know, he wasn't the most talented player out there. I think he was a 7th-round draft pick. 6th or 7th-round pick.
He was not a top draft pick, no, out of Kumazawa University, no.
And he said in one of the interviews, he said, "Geez, man, I was such a late pick. I was just hoping I could one day make the top team and get a hit. And never in, you know, my wildest dreams did I think about being a guy who would get 2,000 hits. Yeah, he was a 6th-round pick. So he deserves a lot of accolades. I don't think he deserves a hall plaque, but I think he's going to get one because he's such a nice guy. But he richly deserves something for all the work that he put in. But we'll see. We'll see what the Carp do for him when he retires, whenever that is. Because right now, he doesn't look like he needs to retire. All right, some notes. We always talk about the top performers of the month once, not each month, but sometimes during the season. And the first one is always the best, so we've had about a month's worth of action out there. I want to start with the Pacific League. I think it's going to be really close voting. It's going to be tough to come up with these top performers this time. What do you think?
I think that's a good question. I think there's a couple. I think the hitters of the month. I have two categories: hitter of the month and winning pitcher of the month.
There you go. Because we all know it just depends on how many wins you get and how few losses you can hold your record to.
Well, that's not the case, necessarily the case, but usually they look at wins first, ERA second, and then if
strikeouts.
Nobody...
Let's go for strikeouts.
not really. No. And if none of the starters have two wins, it goes to a reliever.
Okay.
So those are the rules.
For me in the Pacific League, I think it's Ernesto Mejia of the Lions, and I really can't see anybody else touching him.
Interesting. Well, he's kind of warm and fuzzy. He'd give you a hug.
I'm not looking for anything.
Okay. I have an alternate pick to him.
Well, why? He's leading in home runs and RBIs. 29. Well, he's got 29 now, but I don't know how many he had in the period. But
he's also
leading in strikeouts, though. That's not good.
The other is Daichi Suzuki.
Yeah, but you know they like the long ball.
Yeah, well, again, I'm just saying I agree, but I think I want to mention Suzuki because he's a worthy candidate. I think Mejia, Suzuki, you got a first baseman, you got a kind of a shortstop.
Kind of a shortstop.
You know, a reasonable facsimile of a shortstop. I saw Love Marine Steve today after the game, so I'm glad I said this after I saw him.
I was going to say, did he punch you or did he say to punch John Gibson?
No. He wouldn't do that. He's a nice guy. So anyway, I think Suzuki deserves a mention, but I think Mejia will win. And I think deservedly so.
Okay. All right. And as for pitcher, I was lost on this one, but I'm going to go with Rick Vandenhurk because he hasn't lost and they like that. But I actually think Hideaki Wakui has pitched really well.
I think Hideaki Wakui has pitched pretty well, but he's been very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've also scored a ton of runs. There's three things. He's pitched pretty well. He's located very unusually well this year. And they've scored a zillion runs for him.
Yeah, he had a couple games where if they hadn't have scored the way they've been scoring, he wouldn't have come away with a win.
But he also had a game where he left with a three-run lead and didn't get a win. So.
Right. So that could go either way. Like, the wins are fickle, but... Vandenhurk, there's nothing fickle about what he's doing. He's putting in quality starts. He's striking guys out. He's got the victories. He's got the ERA. I think it's a done deal.
Well, he's got the ERA, but he doesn't have the innings, and I'm going to go with Wakui. I think five. In my completely subjective opinion, I would pick Wakui first and Vandenhurk second. But
what world is this?
That's the normal one I live in. Yes.
Oh, the normal one I live in. Okay.
Yeah, of course. You know, that's how I would see it. And I think they're going to go 5-0, like 5-0, 8.0 ERA. Yeah, who cares about ERA? But it's 2.54. It's 2.59. Yeah, good enough for me.
Okay. In the Central League, another intriguing battle here, I think, in terms of Tomoyuki Sugano of the Giants just been shut down. You know, he had two consecutive shutouts, was pitching another shutout and got pulled out in the seventh inning because he had a blister or something. So he's been great.
So, yeah, okay, so then he threw seven shutout innings on opening day, and then he had two other consecutive shutouts, and then he left the game early because of a blister, and then he gave up some runs. So he had a phenomenal month.
Yeah, he hasn't lost. I think he's going to win it, but I really love the work that two other guys have done, and Shota Imanaga of the Bay Stars.
Yeah,
he's got nothing to show for it.
He has absolutely nothing to show for it.
Except a sore arm and a couple of losses.
Yep.
and
a bunch of no decisions when the relief corps came and swung into action.
Yeah, but every start's a quality start, mm-hmm. except for one, and he's lost four games, so you go figure. And
then,
go ahead.
But as you know, in Japan, the starting pitcher deserves every 100% of the credit for every win, so therefore he's not any good.
I love the way you say that. And then the other guy is Yuta Iwasada of the Tigers, and I just love the work that he's been doing. And I always say how he kills the Dragons, but he's been doing it to everybody this year, and it's been fun to watch.
Yep, he's been really good. His changeup is really good.
Yeah, 2-1. And the other thing I wanted to mention about Imanaga before we get off this, I forgot to mention,
please,
that he was 2 strikeouts away from tying the Central League record the other night when he got the hook for some reason. So,
what's record was
the
that?
The record is 16 strikeouts in a game, and he was at 14 and he got the hook. So, Iwasada has been, because I saw that, I remembered about Iwasada and his strikeouts, because he's been striking guys out left and right, and triple double digits in strikeouts in 3 of his 5 starts so far. So, yeah, he has been great too. But I think it's Sugano. I don't think anybody has matched him.
No. Oh, the other name I'll throw out is 4-1, and that's Hiroki Kuroda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I say it like that because he's pitched, the numbers say he's pitching well, but you look at his face and he's just struggling with, it seems, with every pitch, every inning.
That's Kuroda.
No, but it just seems worse this year. And I love him. I'm the one who tweets, Kuro-chan does this, Kuro-chan does that. I love him, and I'm happy to see it. I wish it was coming easier for him, but to me, every time out, I just feel like it's going to be his last year.
So talk to him when the Carp were at Tokyo Dome about 10 days ago. And, I asked him a couple of questions, and I said, it's really hard coming back. He said, baseball is hard. People in America, and I saw comments, on Twitter and so on, by people saying, he was so good in the States, he'll just kill Japanese hitters. And this doesn't work like that. They'll kill you. It's a grind. They're not going to punch you out. They're not going to throw a knockout punch, but they're going to jab you until you're senseless. So it's not easy. And I asked Kuroda, okay, well, you had that the year last year and it was tough, but was it fun? Are you glad you came back? He said, baseball is not fun.
It's work, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard work. It's hard work. And because he sets such high standards for himself.
Yeah.
He's very rarely happy with his performance. If the team wins, I'll take it. Let me out of here.
You remember when Shinji Sasaoka, another Carp oldie but goodie, when he was – remember that last season that he pitched? He made the same kind of faces.
But he made the scrunchy face all the time.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, but it got scrunchier.
Okay.
Extra scrunch.
Okay.
All right. And the hitters in the Central League, I think Tetsuto Yamada of the Swallows is the man. And that's enough said. I keep saying that on Twitter. But I also think that Ryosuke Kikuchi, Diane Biciedo, there's a lot of guys out there. But Tetsuto Yamada, he's raking it. He's killing it. He's doing everything that people want to say about it. I don't think anybody can touch him.
Well, I think Yamada should win, because basically there's 3 guys who are more or less at the top of the rankings, and Viciado is number 1, Yamada's number 2, and Brad Eldred's very close.
Yeah, they're close.
So yeah, if I had to just pick them on their hitting, I'd go with Viciado, but that's all they care about, so that's probably going to be the case.
Okay. Well, Kikuchi's hitting. They're all hitting pretty high, really high. So everything's inflated. It's only a month.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just go with Yamada and call it a day. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, what they do. Yamada had the best month. No doubt about that overall. But again, overall doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything.
Nope.
All right. Next, making a 4-seam transition, I'd like to talk about the gambling scandal. But I'm only going to mention it very quickly because I told you before, I don't like talking about it, and if you want to read more about it, it's all over the news wires here and there. Shoki Kasahara a former Giant, was arrested as part of the gambling probe involving the Giants, and there's no surprise there because gambling technically is illegal in Japan. So you said it before when we broached this topic long ago, and that's that there's probably going to be a lot more. Blah, blah, blah. I don't really want to discuss this stuff here. It's going to continue, so this is not going to be the first of it, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. And I guess what I have to say is what I've heard, the excuses these guys, the stories these people are telling the police don't sound like the whole truth. So, oh, I was shocked other players were – I was shocked somebody else was betting. Oh, but I was giving him money for – to take. He was getting commissions on the bets he collected. And the guy who was taking his bets didn't know other players were betting. It's like, oh, and organized crime's not involved. Yeah, right. It's like, man, just tell us when you stop playing around, because it's too much, too many lies right now. So we'll see where this goes eventually.
Yeah, it's nothing like the truth. Nothing like the whole truth.
Nothing at all like the truth. No.
Okay. All right, next is the Oryx Buffaloes, who switched out a bunch of coaches. They've been switching out these coaches. They've been playing musical coaching chairs with their coaches. And the battery coach and the pitching coach and the development and player coach, they were all being switched around like pieces on a game board somewhere. And this is one of the reasons I call them the Buffaloes, and that's L-O-W-S at the end. They're living up to that moniker this season, and it just has nothing to do with the players. It's all organizational, and, you know, those eye-violating uniforms that they played in on Friday with the pink plaid things and then the blue
plaid.
Saturday and Sunday, that just... You know, that just, I had to turn the TV off just about sometimes when I...
Yeah.
It was...
Although a funny thing is, I thought Kaneko is really suited to those blue plaid uniforms. He looked really at home in that kind of getup.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's go to fielded questions. All right, the first one is from Dave from Baltimore, and he says, I saw a blurb the other day about Masataka Nashida considering using Kazuo Matsui as an emergency relief pitcher. How often do position players end up pitching in MPV? Offhand, the only time I can recall it happening was Ichiro's stunt stint in one of the All-Star games in 1996. Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, it was 1996. He ended up pitching to Shingo Takatsu, currently the Swallows pitching coach. Heard that mentioned the other day in the Maeda game. So anyway, for what that's worth, how often does it actually happen? Essentially never. Because I think we've talked about this before. There's only so many innings they play. They've got time limit. They used to have time limits. Now they've got a 12 inning limit. There's that. Because they have 28 active players, even though they can only use 25, they carry three extra pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
They carry three extra. You know, three relievers get to play because they've got starters who don't have to be on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, those two things, you really don't ever get to the point where you need an emergency pitcher.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is we don't see teams throwing position players out on the mound in blowouts here for reasons like you stated, but also because there just seem to be fewer blowouts, those catastrophic blowouts. And another thing is in the States, you basically might have two open dates a month, maybe three.
Right.
But in Japan, you have at least four,
and yes,
sometimes five or six. And yes, that's a big difference when you don't have games on those days where you can just, you know, you're going to be able to rest guys. You can throw a pitcher out there because you know you're not going to have the game the next day.
Right.
And they don't have that in the States.
Okay. As for how many times it's been done, I know it's been done twice with Akihito Igarashi, who played most of his career with Lotte, but he did it with Oryx. Okay, and the other one was Orestes Destrade of Cebu did it. And he had one of those ones where his arm was never right after he pitched.
Oh, gosh.
He pitched, I think, one inning in Shizuoka.
in like the 12th inning, and it was like, okay, we'll let you pitch and just be quiet. And he pitched, and it was essentially that it really damaged, I understand it damaged his career. Something happened that something else happened that affected something, and he wasn't, his arm was never quite right again. Of course, he was a first baseman, DH, so. Okay, so there was that. Now, the other thing is I want to mention is that Igarashi had wanted to do that. Bobby Valentine had wanted to do that with Igarashi when he was with the Marines in 1995. But he was told by the team front office, no, we can't do it because we have to alert the press before we use a guy as an emergency pitcher. And that might be what Nishida knows the rules. You know, I've told the press that we might use him, so now it's okay. We have to clear it with the media first. So Kazuo Matsui, by the way, of course, was a pitcher until he turned pro.
Right.
And then they turned him into a shortstop. Right. He was a high school pitcher with PL Gakuen in Osaka. And he began playing a position for the first time when he was 18 years old. Okay. And the other one is Takuro Ishii. Marty Brown told me once, he said, I'd love to give him a chance to pitch because although he had 2,000 hits, mm-hmm. and he's a potential future Hall of Famer. He started his career as a pitcher, and he actually won a game with the Taiyo Whales, now the DeNA BayStars. And Marty was saying, yeah, I'd love to give him a chance to pitch. It never happened, but he was saying, when I told this to Ishii, he said, oh, yeah, just let me at it. I want to do it before I retire.
Yep. All right, the next question is from Stuart Miller. This is via Twitter, and he says, any word on when Daichi Osara of the Hiroshima Carp is coming back? Hashtag high heat. And I looked before the show. I looked today. I couldn't find anything. And that's usually good news, though, when you don't see anything. I know that they were going to rest him, mm-hmm. and we know it's an elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the old adage, you know, no news is good news, mm-hmm. applies here. Well, I haven't seen anything about him. I haven't heard anything about him. So, and I've listened to a lot of the Carp broadcasts, either on the radio or on the TV. I haven't heard people talking about him. So that's.
Yeah.
Which is I can say. What about you?
I think you're right. I think the less we hear about him, the better in that respect.
I was going to say, I bet you say that to all the guys here.
I do, in fact.
All right. And lastly, we have an MP3 from our buddy Michael Westbay.
Hey there, John and Jim. Michael here. Last week, when you were talking about how Nami-chan was perhaps being set up as a scapegoat, one of you asked, what kind of influence can he possibly have on the play on the field and thus contribute to the losing effort? Well, one of the things that the announcers have been saying all season is that Nami-chan has been pushing for the batters to be more aggressive at the plate and hit early in the count. I ran some numbers and I found that the Bay Stars have been sending up the least number of batters per game. 36.26 is their average, with Oryx being the only other team in the 37 range with 37.38 batters per game. The most interesting part of my study, though, is that the Giants are actually at the bottom of the list when it comes to pitches per batter. The Giants have been averaging 3.69 pitches per batter, while the Bay Stars are at 3.82. Hiroshima is almost tied with them at 3.83. But let's see how these three teams diverge when we go a little bit further. When we look at the number of pitches per out, here the Bay Stars are once again at the bottom of the 12 teams, averaging 5.16 pitches per out. The Giants, being as aggressive as they are averaging 5.18 pitches per out. Hiroshima, however, is ranked fourth in all 12 teams with 5.64 pitches per out. Cebu and SoftBank top the list with 5.88 and 5.85, respectively. So how does this aggressive behavior translate to batting average? Well, for the Bay Stars, they are at the bottom of all 12 teams, once again, batting just .226 through April 28th. How does all this translate to scoring? Well, I think you guys mentioned it last week. The Bay Stars are dismal at scoring. I think that Hiroshima and the Giants have both shown that being aggressive at the plate, swinging early in the count, can be very beneficial. So why is it that the Bay Stars, who were also very aggressive at the plate, swinging early, cannot seem to put the ball in play fair? It's been a very frustrating season to watch so far. I like what Nami-chan is doing, but the execution just isn't happening. Back to you, John and Jim.
All right, thanks a lot, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Much appreciated. Well, it's amazing how when you make statements about someone's favorite team, or even your own favorite team, listeners think they hear something else, because neither you nor I said the word scapegoat, so I don't know where you came up with that. Isn't it really weird? You make disparaging comments about a team or some of the team's players, and they get that Animal House mentality where, you know, the Animal House line where they say, you can't do that to our pledges. Only we can do that to our pledges.
I think you could interpret what I said as the team would eventually, if things didn't turn around, they would eventually turn to Ramirez and say, well, you're the one to go.
Well, I distinctly, because I'm the one who edits the show, so I listen to every word very carefully again after we do it. And I it's no problem. It's what I do. I distinctly remember you being snarky and making a comment about how the media or how the Japanese outside forces would use that as a word for blame, but I don't think we even used the word blame. We didn't use language is all I'm saying. But we did talk about the fact that it might come to finger pointing at Alex Ramirez, but we were just posing the question, how much do you think this is his fault? And the study was really nice. I liked the numbers that he came up with. That was really interesting. And the Bay Stars jumping on strikes early doesn't surprise me. If the pitchers are attacking the zone, you don't want to get too far behind, because then you're going to chase pitches that are out of the zone.
Right.
So I like that mentality of going after that first strike, especially if it's a fastball. But I don't know what's not working there, but something's not working for the players that they have right now, and that's contributing to the problem. But I think, just like I mentioned last week, I don't think it's about philosophy or approach. I just think in some instances they're using replacement level guys.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the star players, and we just talked about those salaries, so they have some money somewhere. This DNA company can produce more money for these players, so go out and get some more talent.
Yeah, you can probably generate it electronically. They're good at that stuff. I thought it was interesting, and I'm glad you did this, Michael, because I love, you know, you listen to what, you know, the people are saying on TV and so on, and then ask yourself whether it's true. And, you know, sort of what Bill James did. So perhaps you'll end up working with the Red Sox in 40 years. I think the interesting, what struck me as interesting is that, you know, you're going, I think it is hard to tell that they're being aggressive early in the count from those numbers, but they do suggest that. And I thought it was good pointing out Hiroshima has done quite well with having fairly few pitches per at bat per out. But I think the obvious thing is that's a difficult policy. It's something you need a lot of discipline to execute, because you need discipline and you need experience to know, is this the best there's going to be? You know, the swing at the first good pitch, you know, and that changes from pitcher to pitcher. It depends on the count. But in general, most, you know, hitters do the most damage when they're well ahead in the count and they can work the counts. It's not surprising, I think, that the three best offenses in Japan, Yakult, Seibu, and SoftBank, are the three teams that see the most pitches per batter.
Right.
So it can work, and Ramirez was a batter who basically looked for the pitch he most wanted to hit. He wasn't really interested in getting a walk. He wasn't too interested in getting a better count. He just wanted that one. You know, when he saw the pitch he wanted, that he was looking for, that's the one I want to go.
The Andrew Jones philosophy of waiting for my pitch.
Yeah, that's right.
And that I had a better line for that, but it was stuck in my throat. Okay.
All right. Thank you for the comment, Michael. And usually we try to keep those to a minute, but because it's Michael, we forgave him.
That's mighty brotherly of you.
It's brotherly of me. Okay. But anyone else with a comment or a question, please send it to ykyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #highheat, at JBW Podcast. You can also leave us a note on our Facebook page. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening.